It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
I don't know if you are feeling in the festive mood, but I am, mainly because my children are so excited about getting the tree, which we are going to get, I'm going to get today, stick it in a bucket of water, and we're going to address it this weekend. So I hope you're well. I hope everybody's safe and getting ready to hibernate for Christmas. I've got loads of great stuff on the way to share with you, which is great. I got announced yesterday I'm doing Hogmanay for BBC Scotland, which is a proper bucket list thing for me, to be honest, because I just grew up watching that show. So excited. Music guests, film guests, TV guests. Yeah, so I'm very excited about that. It'll be on BBC Scotland, which you can access on Hogmanay. But yeah, very exciting. But anyway, thank you for choosing to listen to the podcast. It's been a busy old time and we've had some lovely responses, some great guests as well. And it's just really just been a wonderful thing to be able to continue to do. We feel very lucky that we've been able to do that. So thank you to all our guests that have been on so far. Thank you to you for listening. We really appreciate you. So the latest guest on the podcast was someone who, he's not a tricky interview, but it's quite interesting because he doesn't watch any of his films. So it's quite hard to talk to him about the whole construction of the creativity once the music's been put on and stuff, because he hasn't seen them, which is weird, but I get it. But anyway, he's fascinating. Our latest guest on Soundtrack and is a hugely versatile actor and musician, most presently to be seen as Paolo in Ridley Scott's House of Gucci. Jared Leto first gained recognition in My So-Called Life, which anyone of my generation, which is old, it's not really, it's just Earth years, was probably a little obsessed with. He then went on to form 30 Seconds to Mars with his brother Shannon and has also landed numerous notable cinematic roles, including the likes of The Joker in Suicide Squad and Niander Wallace in Blade Runner 49. He absolutely loves scores too, and you'll find out which ones in particular shortly. But it seems only fitting we begin with one of his own songs, which I referenced during our chat, the anthemic Kings and Queens. Ready?
Hello.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm all right. Thanks for asking. I want to talk to you about music, please, if that's okay. Because, well, obviously you're, you know, massively successful music artist, massively successful film creative. And I'm interested about where these worlds collide. But before we get onto that, I want to talk about this film, current film, House of Gucci and Paolo, because he seems very musical. He seems to have constantly have music playing in his head. He's always dancing. He's always moving.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm distracted because I have the same bookshelf as yours. Yours and yours.
I'm in your house.
IKEA. It was my Zoom bookcase, but it's great minds think alike. So yeah, no, Paolo is, he is very musical. You know, I mean, the Italian language is musical. It's a song. It's maybe a symphony. And, you know, mm-hmm. Paolo is certainly the conductor of his own kind of mad circus. And it was fun to listen to some of the Italian hits of the 80s. That was a great experience, and my Italian friends helped me out with that quite a bit. I sang at one point, but I don't know if it made it into the film. And it was great to dance. I danced a few times. I don't know how many times in the film too, but he is a musical guy, and you know, he just has a love for life, and it was a lot of fun to be in that place with him.
Yeah, there's a great moment where Gaga's character Patrizia comes to see him, and they have a little dance whilst they're having a chat, and it's wonderful to watch. He's kind of in perpetual motion.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, he's one of a kind. I miss old Paolo.
Yeah, I want a spinoff. I want a Paolo spinoff. But I find it interesting because I know that you don't really watch the films that much in terms of once you've been in them. But with music and films, it's amazing to see how and where music is used within film and how it can very much be a character within film as well. With this film and with other experiences, is music played on set much?
You know, it's a dangerous game because music is so powerful. It can just carve a hole straight to your heart. You know, I've had directors play music before scenes, and I used to pump up my emotion with music before scenes. And I know that actors have great success with that, but I actually don't like to do that anymore because, you know, as soon as the music stops, you can kind of feel a bit empty, like your dancing partner has run off to the bathroom or something. So you do have to, for me, I have to be careful with that. But there's always, you know, I think each character, there is a music, there is a soundtrack to the character. And, you know, in preparation, that's great. In the makeup chair, that's great. As an education, that's great. You know, because there are different, you know, maybe not different tempos for different generations, but there are certain, you know, different rhythms for different people, a different way of moving. And, you know, Paolo, you know, his hip bones were like, they almost detached from his body. He had a little booty like nobody's business.
Ridley's made some great choices in this film with the music, which I don't know if you've seen it, but there's a really great collaboration of existing music, and be that, you know, classical pieces or something like Eurythmics' Here Comes the Rain Again. Is just, it's so cleverly and brilliantly used and has a slight comedic twist at times as well. George Michael's Faith is in there as well. There's some, if nothing else, you should give yourself the luxury of just enjoying the music that Ridley's done for the film as well.
Well, a lot of, you just listed a bunch of songs I love, but I've heard that there's a lot of fun music in this, and I'm looking forward to it. Listen. Well, I guess it would be nice if I could touch your body. I know not everybody has got a body like you, but I gotta think twice before I give my heart away. And I know all the games you play because I play them too.
Tell me about some of your favorite soundtracks.
I was listening to Jeremy Irons' film, the soundtrack to The Mission, the other day, which I love. Mm-hmm. That's one of my favorites. I love soundtracks. And, you know, that oftentimes I find myself wanting to listen to a soundtrack rather than a band.
Thank you.
One of my favorites is the Passion, Peter Gabriel, Last Temptation of Christ. I think that the soundtrack to Arrival is really beautiful. You know, it's interesting when we watch a film, if you have a piece of music and a piece of film and they work together, there's a synergy that's just hard to beat. It's magic, you know, when you have the visual and the audio, it can really just transport you to a surprising place.
I was listening to you talk about Blade Runner and how that was how important that film was to you in terms of, it was lovely to hear you, I think. You said something that taught you so much about cinema, you know, both in terms of in front of the camera and behind the camera as well. And that's a great example of a score that can, that it really has kind of got its own kind of narrative and character within the film as well. Did you feel a connection with that score?
Yeah, you know, when I spoke about Blade Runner a couple of times, I forgot to mention the music because the music is used so well. You know, they have like those kind of chimes and the way that this abstract voice is used, it's haunting and really gives you a sense of atmosphere and scale in the film. But Blade Runner is a big one for me. It still is. I mean, I always tell people that, you know, if conversations come up about what to watch, I'm still excited to tell people to watch Blade Runner if they haven't seen it. And the performances, the cinematography, the directing, the art direction, it's just fantastic. It's gorgeous, gorgeous film.
Yeah, 34 to 46. Hold
back. Wait a minute. Go right. Stop. Enhance 5719. Track 45 left. Stop. Enhance 15 to 23.
As is Denise, you know, 2049 that you were part of, I thought he did a beautiful job with that film. And similarly, Hans and Benjamin's score for that, I thought was such a great compliment to the original film.
You know, although I never saw that film, I almost wish I wasn't in it because then I would have watched it. But I listened to the score to it. So that was fun. And there's even a song based off or a song for my character. And the track list, and that's kind of great.
Ever had that experience where you've been given a theme for a character that you're about to play, that it's been a helpful tool or a helpful journey into that character prior to filming?
You know, I made a movie called Mr. Nobody once, and I think there may have been some music or an idea of music, but there was a beautiful soundtrack by the filmmaker's brother, who has since passed away, but he was, you know, an incredibly talented person. And the soundtrack isn't available on, you can't stream it. Yeah, you can get little bits and pieces of it on YouTube, but I would love it if someone would find a way to get that together. That'd be a good one.
Sure, if anybody can, you can, sir, for sure. I think that it's such an important part of filmmaking. But when you go back to Requiem for a Dream, for example, and Darren and how he and Clint worked so amazingly together with that film as well. I mean, that music is so inbred within the whole narrative of that film as well. It's an incredible relationship with the story.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about Requiem, and the music for that film was, you know, they're kind of one and the same. When you think about the movie, it's hard not to think about the music. And I know there were a lot of remixes of that song. People used it in, you know, electronic music and all kinds of things. But that's Clint Mansell and the Cronus Quartet. But yeah, powerful, powerful. And like I said before, when you have the right music with the right film, it's transformative.
when you are, you know, you have these two worlds, is there a point for you where your world of music and your world of film collide?
You know, they have. When I work as a documentary filmmaker, if I'm editing, they can collide. I mean, you know, music is essential, like we spoke about already, but they certainly can. And just being an artist, a creative person, a crafts person, you know, anything you do that challenges you, you learn from. And, you know, if you're failing often, you're learning even more, and you apply one to the other. And it's basically using creativity to solve problems. So there's a common ground there. The process is a bit different. It's kind of like, you know, making a stew and putting together a bookshelf from IKEA. They're different things, but you're still using your brain and your heart, maybe not your heart if it's the bookshelf, but yeah, using your will and your brains to kind of cobble something together.
When you think about the visuals though for 30 Seconds to Mars, they're always incredibly cinematic, you know, whether it's that video for Kings and Queens where you shut down parts of LA to kind of film that and stuff. They've got this incredible cinematic quality. How involved are you in that process of it, you know, in terms of that artistic side to it?
Well, too involved, probably. That's what took me like months and months just to make a single video, and they would end up to be, you know, 10 minutes long, and the label would be, you know, screaming at me. But, you know, that's been fun to kind of to work in the opposite way, is make, I mean, in a way the album is the film and the video is the soundtrack. It's interesting to work that way. And even on our last album, you know, we made an entire documentary based on the album. We had, I believe it was 92 crews or something like that, shooting in every state in the country on a single day. So we made a film called A Day in the Life of America, and we captured A Day in the Life of America on the 4th of July in a really tumultuous time, and made this, you know, feature length documentary. And It was a really exciting experiment. But again, it was almost, you know, it was making the film in response to the music.
What does America mean to you? That's the question that Jared Leto and his band 30 Seconds to Mars are asking.
A Day in the Life.
Day in the Life of America, capturing 24 hours in our country on the 4th of July.
Say hey, guys.
Good morning, America!
Okay, I knew that this was going to be a great project. It's ambitious, but you know what? I think y'all can do it.
Now, here we are. What time is it now? 11:58. 2 minutes until the official start of A Day in the Life of America. We have begun.
Can you even see what you're fighting for? Bloodlust and a holy war. Listen up, hear the patriots shout. Times are changing. In the end, the choice was clear. Take a shot in the face of fear. Fist up in the fire of life. Times are changing.
Happy birthday, America.
Happy 4th, America.
Do you believe that you can win this fight tonight?
Look at the sky, see a dying star. White lies, it's a man on fire. Making love with the devil hurts. Times are changing.
Is that something that appeals to you, to, you know, the steps that you take towards, you know, documentaries and that side of it, being involved in the sort of visual creative with your band, of taking that step into feature film directing yourself?
Well, I started off in film school studying to be a director. And, you know, I direct when I have a real passion to tell a story, or when it's a necessity. You mm-hmm. know, if I can't find someone that is going to probably... Sometimes you just feel like you have to do it yourself because no one's dumb enough to work as hard as you on it. I'll just kind of get drafted. You know, I've been doing our videos for, my God, 100 years now. But on the last album, I actually had Mark Romanek, who's made some of the best videos of all time. He made a video for us for a song called Rescue Me, and it was just so simple and so beautiful. it was such a relief to be able to pass it off to someone like that. And I think he finished it in about a week, so he really embarrassed me.
What's next? I mean, we see so many things in terms of whether it be, you know, working with Darren again on Adrift or Tron 3 with Garth Davis. We don't know if any of this is true. More Joker, 30 Seconds to Mars. What is next for you?
Probably retirement at this point.
Oh, come on.
You know, there's a lot happening and a lot of exciting things. You know, like I've written over well over 100 songs and we wrote a lot. At the beginning of COVID, we just dug in and started writing. And my brother and I have, we put a collaboration out with a guy named Millennium. So there's a song floating around out there called Wouldn't Change a Thing, which was really fun. We'd never done that before. And we honestly have an entire album done. We may have three albums done right now, just about when to put it out, you know, and then to get back on the road. It's inevitable at some point.
Great. Well, listen, thank you for your time today. It's always a pleasure to see you. And congratulations on The House of Gucci and Paolo. As I say, I really hope there's a spin-off film about him because his story, I think, is fascinating in itself. It's great. Thank you, Jared.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
For a long time now, I've had this dream. For life for me, don't know what it means. Same courtroom, ceiling falling. I start running. Seems so clear in the breakup.
Featuring 30 Seconds to Mars, that's I Wouldn't Change a Thing by Illenium. Rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking with Jared Leto. My huge thanks to Jared for taking the time to talk to us. As of listening to this podcast, House of Gucci is now out in cinemas. Go see it. It's fabulous. Lady Gaga's going to win all the awards, I think. Father, son and House of Gucci. She ad-libbed that line whilst they were filming. Everybody's brilliant in it. Jared's unrecognisable, so great, very comedic. Very funny. It's colourful, it's lush, it's funny, it's beautiful, it's tragic. It's kind of like, wow, that actually happened. I really enjoyed it. So House of Gucci out now in cinemas. We'll put a Spotify playlist up for the show via edithbowman.com, which is also the place you can catch up with every single interview that I've done, including my two conversations with Mr. Denis Villeneuve. Please follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. We are at Soundtracking UK, and be sure to check out our YouTube channel too for occasional shows that I put together featuring guests from the podcast and others. In fact, over the weekend, I'm going to try and put up as many as I can. We've got the likes of Jared to put up. Who else have we got? We've got Hans Zimmer. We've got quite a few others. So I'll get as many as I can up on the YouTube channel over the weekend. Next up, it's another legendary composer who I not only got the joy of spending time with, but actually in Abbey Road Studios. Mr. James Newton Howard. Extraordinary composer is our next guest on Soundtracking. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.